Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Yes, good morning. This is Racing Across America. I am Seth Merrow. It's Belmont Stakes Day. Looking forward to it. Nice day of action capping off the Triple Crown. And because we are capping off the Triple Crown, who better to talk to than our friend Jeremy Plonk, author of Countdown to the Crown. You can catch that Fridays leading into the Triple Crown. The latest package is out with the Belmont Stakes thoughts as well. So I thought we'd reach out to Jeremy as we have throughout the pre-Triple Crown season and the Triple Crown season itself. And I was in Saratoga on Monday and heading back to my car in the parking lot. And I hear, hey, Seth, I look over. Who's in town with the family for a vacation but Jeremy Plonk? Jeremy, good morning. And how was your time in Saratoga?
It was good. I overate. I'm back home now and ready for the Belmont. Just a fabulous time. Everything looks to be in order in the city, getting ready for the big meet. I guess, 5 weeks away now?
Yeah.
So looking good up there. And the construction on that chute for the one-turn mile races still has a ways to go, but there is a little bit of groundbreaking the way it looked from my perspective walking around the track. So look forward to seeing those new mile races up there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, absolutely very interesting to see how those play out and with the configuration, how post positions may play into it. It does give another option. Certainly if some turf races come off the turf, it gives them another distance to play around with. So it's going to be fun and add another piece to the Saratoga handicapping puzzle. But speaking of handicapping puzzles, we have the Belmont Stakes this afternoon. We'll get some ideas there. Before we do that, always like to catch up and horseplayernow.com, advise people to go there and check that out on a regular basis. But what's coming up Belmont Stakes weekend at Horseplayer?
Well, we've got our buzz report out right now. Jason Blewett, of course, a longtime NYRA and Gulfstream handicapper, is our East Coast handicapper, and he's got the full card today for Belmont Stakes Day. Terry Terrell's got California. I take care of the Midwest as usual in the buzz report, and Terry and I also chime in with our Belmont picks as well. So three tracks covered around the country in the buzz report, but the big focus, obviously, Belmont Park and how we can make some money on this card with the smaller field size.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you about that because we just finished the handicapping show, and my partner Anthony Mormino and I talked a little bit about it because it seems like there was consternation on social media this week on some of the short fields, which I completely get. But it seemed like there were two different opinions. Oh, short fields, so it's just going to be no fun betting. And the other side is, but look at the quality. And I think I'm a little more on the quality side, and I think there are races like the Manhattan which are going to offer some fun opportunities betting-wise, and maybe if you put them into the horizontals, you can pull in some of those shorter fields. But I'm more, as a racing fan, I'm looking forward to Flightline versus Speaker's Corner and Latruska and Clairiere, and so I'm not discounting the fact that short fields are a little bit disappointing, but I'm still really looking forward to the day. Where do you come down?
Well, I'm looking forward to it as a fan. As a gambler, I'm going to have to obviously, you know, pull back a little bit from what I normally might do on, like, a Belmont Stakes Day. I mean, it's math, right? It's nothing personal. It's nothing against the NYRA racing office or the NYRA product or anything like that. But when you're gambling, look, it's pari-mutuel betting, so the losers pay the winners, right? I mean, that's the definition of the game. And there aren't as many losing tickets in the shorter fields. That's just math. I mean, like, look at this, for example, Seth. In a pick four, where it's five-horse field, there are 625 combinations that could come in. In a pick four with 10-horse fields, there's 10,000. 10,000 versus 625. So if you think you're going to bet pick fours, you know, in these short fields or pick threes and even inter-race bets, there's only 20 exacta combinations in a five-horse field, five times four. There's 90, 10 times nine. So 90 versus 20, there's 4.5 times more exacta combinations in a 10-horse field. So it's not just the horse here or there. The math on the number of tickets that are going to pay you really makes a difference. And even to play the math a little further, if you say, well, what good would it be to have five more 30-to-1 shots in a race? Well, 30-to-1 means they have 3% of the pool. So five more of those means 15% more. So the same horse you're going to bet in a five-horse field would pay 15% more to win in a 10-horse field if every other horse in the race was 30-to-1. So it does make a difference.
Yeah, it's certainly, as I say, I completely get the thought process there. And as a fan and a bettor, I have the mixed emotions, but I am looking forward to some of these undercard races. But the Belmont itself, I think, is very intriguing, very interesting. I don't know whether I would tab these as the best three-year-olds we have, although we'll see maybe on Rich Strike, and I'll get some opinions on that. But before we get into the Belmont itself, the last time we talked to you was Kentucky Derby Day, so I wanted to hit on the Derby and the Preakness, and we'll watch some stretch runs of both of those first legs of the Triple Crown, and first get some thoughts from you on Rich Strike as we watch the stretch run to the Kentucky Derby going back 5 weeks ago. You know, mid-stretch, I liked Epicenter, and mid-stretch, I thought, well, I was in great shape, and then up the inside comes Rich Strike to throw a monkey wrench into things. I came out of that thinking a complete fluke, and as we talk about the Belmont later, we can get into that, because I think since then he's kind of worked nicely. But what were your thoughts coming out of the results of the Derby a few weeks back?
Well, like everybody else, I was befuddled and kind of like scrambling around afterwards, wondering how in the world did that happen, you know? And there's not a logical prelude to that, you know? I mean, there was nothing on the form that made you think that was possible the way that he ran. You can come and say it's circumstantial based on the pace, but then the whole field should have collapsed, you know? And there should have, you know, the fact that Epicenter and Zandon were right there after the strong fractions and in position, Epicenter especially, tells you that it wasn't a complete meltdown, that it wasn't just a complete cave-in, despite the fact that it was a fast pace. It just didn't set up in a gift basket for all of the closers. Only the one who ran exceptionally was able to take advantage of it, and he got all the way to the winner's circle. And he did it because he ran the last quarter mile in the Derby exceptionally fast. He ran one of the fastest final quarters in the Derby in the last decade, the fastest in the last decade. Only Animal Kingdom in 2011 has gone faster in the last 11 derbies for the final quarter mile. So it was exceptional come-home time. He got a great ride. A lot of the things that people have noticed, you know, since then, I don't think there's any magic special sauce other than the fact that he ran an exceptional final quarter, historically fast final quarter, and that's why he was able to get there. Can he do that again? We'll find out. You know, I was a little... I'm kind of a cynical skeptic anyway when it comes to trainer talk, you know. They're good interviews and stuff for shows, but I don't think they always tell you what's the real deal. And so when this horse didn't run back in the Preakness, it's like, well, are we really just waiting the 5 weeks, you know, that kind of deal. So I'm always a little curious, and I want to see how the horse works. You know, Bill Finley of Thoroughbred Daily News came out with the story that, and you know, it was public record as far as the bets list go, but you know, Rich Strike went on the vets list in Kentucky after the Kentucky Derby. Now, Eric Reed said it was nothing. It was just chiropractic work, and you have to register that. Okay. You know, again, skeptic or not, you know, you just kind of like listen to things and say, okay, well, if he needed chiropractic work after the Derby, okay, maybe that's why he didn't run back in 2 weeks. His two works since then have been fast, faster than you might expect for a horse who came from, you know, 15, 20 lengths off the lead in the Kentucky Derby. But he was a little geeked up, I thought, early in the work, pulling on the rider. Former Mountaineer jock Gabe Lagunas is the guy who works him in the morning. And, you know, he was pulling early in those works. I think he's going to be a little bit closer to the pace than people think. I think he's kind of geeked up going into this race. And we'll see if he can replicate the same kind of form late as he did in the Derby. Considering I think he's going to run much faster earlier in the race, even though the fact is the race is a mile and a half. I think he's going to go quicker than he did in the Derby the first half, three-quarters of the race. And will he have the same kick late? That's the question. But his Derby win was thoroughly genuine. Jeff Siegel and I discussed this a lot in our podcast over the past couple weeks. Both were very impressed by what we saw in the Kentucky Derby. It's hard to knock what he did there.
Yeah, to me it's just so fluky. I'm really intrigued to see what he does this afternoon. We'll talk about him a little more when we get to the Belmont itself. But before we do that, I also wanted some thoughts going back a few weeks ago to the Preakness. We'll watch the Preakness stretch run, early voting. Hats off to Chad Brown and Seth Klarman, bypassing the – before the Derby, it was interesting to hear Chad talking about it and saying, you know, I'm lucky enough to have an owner who doesn't feel – forced. You know, it's, this isn't the once one horse he'll ever own that may have the opportunity. So we have the luxury of being able to wait, and we're watching the stretch run here. Early voting benefits from that. Epicenter, I thought, given what happened at the start, ran very well to run second. I'd love your thoughts, too. I said, you know, that night people were kind of being critical on social media of Joel Rosario, and I said, you know, I'm not as critical. He came out of the gate, and a horse on the inside came out, a horse on the outside came in, and he kind of got squeezed back, and at that point he didn't have any other choice but to go and wind up in a kind of a bad position for him, sitting about eighth early. But as I say, he ran well late, and I'm still, as we look at the three-year-olds, I'm still feeling like Epicenter may be the best three-year-old, but it's hard to, you know, if you're voting, given the record, you may be up against it a little bit. But give us your thoughts on the results of the Preakness a couple of 3 weeks back.
Well, I thought it was a really predictable race. You know, this is one that ran just the way that I thought it would. Not that I knew that Epicenter would get away slow in that regard, but I, even if Epicenter got away well, he was not going to outrun, I don't think, early voting, you know, early. And then you had the extra horse in there, Armagnac, show some pace. But I really thought Epicenter and was going to run his race, but I thought the horse to beat in there was early voting. I kind of said it on some radio shows Derby week. I said, you know, look, I don't know who's going to win the Derby, but I'll give you if you can find in Las Vegas a future book for the Preakness, early voting is going to win the Preakness. And it was just kind of they managed the horse absolutely proper. He's got a ton of talent. That Wood Memorial was the best Wood we've seen, you know, maybe going back to, you know, some of those Escondarea and Bellamy Road type races that were really exceptional a long time back in the Wood. This was a very, very good addition of the Wood this year, where Mo Donegal and early voting came out of. And I took Mo Donegal to win in the Derby off of that race, and the rail probably didn't help him any there. But then early voting was just in line next to take over in the Preakness, and he ran a big race, you know, paid what, 13.40, a really nice payoff. Well managed all the way through, and to the credit of Epicenter, he's a really good horse. When things don't go his way, he still runs well. That's the sign of a very good horse. He's the best three-year-old in the country to this point. When you take a look at both talent and resume combined, he's got, you know, he's got the edge on everybody. Nobody's got a resume and as much raw ability. There might be a horse with more raw ability coming along down the pike, but they won't have the resume of him to this point. But the championship is still going to be decided in the second half of the year. I don't think it'll be decided today by any of these horses. I don't, you know, well, I guess Rich Strike, if he wins the Belmont, he can clinch it. And, you know, if he wins two-thirds of the Triple Crown, he's probably the champion. But, you know, not always for certain, because we got still half of a year left to go. But I thought the Preakness, as it usually is a very formful race that runs kind of the way it looks. The public doesn't always perceive it that way. And I think they overlook early voting to a ridiculous extent. I thought he was like a 5-2 shot in there. I thought he'd be like 5-2 second choice. To get 5-1, that was great.
Yeah, as you were talking, I pulled up the chart and I was just looking, because I had a bankroll promotion in here, and the exact that kind of bailed me out that day for the folks who I was playing for here at the race book in Albany. You know, you got $25 on the exact and the 5-1 on early voting, yep. As you say, very, very generous. But just before we jump on, I've asked everybody really that we've talked to about the Preakness with, what did you make of the odds in that? The odds were so crazy. I mean, all you can kind of attribute it to is the Rich Strike effect, where people must have said, well, we're not going to let a horse get away at a crazy price, because Fenwick at 13-1, Happy Jack at 11-1, the odds board was just crazy, and people commented all afternoon on it on social media, and some people were like, oh, these have to be wrong. These can't be right. They were just so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a vast overreaction to the 80-1. You know, we saw some of that when Mind That Bird won, you know, for a couple years after that, like top end in the Derby, even with 18, 19, 20 horses, was in the 30s. They weren't letting anybody go above, you know, the 30s. So we'll see that again in the Derby next year. Everybody's going to remember Rich Strike, and probably the longest shot in the 20-horse Derby next year will be about 35-1, and you'll be like scratching your head, you know. But in the Preakness, that was extreme. What the heck was Fenwick in there, like 17-1 or something? I mean, it's like, come on. Like, the horse had absolutely no chance on earth, and was 17-1. Then you look like at the Kentucky Derby, you say, wow, at 17-1, I could have got a really good horse. You could get like an Arkansas Derby winner at 25-1, you know, I mean, whatever Cyberknife was, you know. But then in the Preakness, you're getting 17-1 on Fenwick. I mean, come on. But yeah, that was strange betting indeed. I'd be curious to see what they do with this race now, right? I mean, is it the same thing with the Field of Eight? You're not going to get a lot in the wind pool in a Field of Eight. You know, you're not going to have any like real high enders to start with. You know, Golden Glider for Cassie, probably the longest shot in the race. And he doesn't look like a 75-1 type kind of horse. So the top end in this Belmont might be around 20.
Yeah, you would have to think. I think that's probably about right. Let's jump into it. Again, we had the handicapping show a little bit earlier, and I gave out my selections. I just think it's a bunch where that you know, nobody is jumping off the page. We don't have a super prominent three-year-old, as you say. If Rich Strike wins, maybe then he jumps to the head of the class, amazingly, given what his early career looked like. But I'm taking a pop with Creative Minister. I just thought, you know, lightly raced, maybe moving in the right direction, comes out of what may turn out to be a very nice Preakness with early voting in Epicenter 1-2. He was third, so I'm going to go in that direction. I put Mo Donegal underneath, and I pulled up your countdown to the crown, and I see you have Mo Donegal on top of your selection. So I pulled up the replay of that Wood Memorial going back to April 9th. Mo Donegal will be a close-up winner over early voting. Skippy Longstockings, who's also in on Saturday afternoon, runs third in here. But talk a little bit about Mo Donegal this afternoon in the Belmont Stakes.
Well, the race you're seeing at the Wood Memorial, you know, he came home in 35 and two-fifths seconds for the final three furlongs of a mile and an eighth race. I've been doing Countdown to the Crown for 17 years. I cannot remember a faster come-home time in one of these mile and an eighth final prep races. There may have been one, but I'm telling you off the top of my head, I've typed a couple million words in that series. I don't remember ever typing 35 and change. On the back three furlongs of a final Derby prep. It was absolutely exceptional, and it took that kind of exceptional effort to reel in early voting. That's why I thought he was going to be so tough in the Preakness, because what are the odds somebody's going to come home in 35 and change in the Preakness? Not likely, and so, you know, that got him to the winner's circle. For Mo Donegal coming out of that race, he ran his race in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, he came home in the second fastest final quarter mile. Rich Strike had the fastest final quarter in the Derby. The second fastest final quarter in the Derby was Mo Donegal. He ran his race. He had the one hole. It wasn't brutal the first, you know, couple jumps out of the gate. That new starting gate does help in the Kentucky Derby with the initial run right out of the starting gate. No doubt about that. But the problem with the rail and any of the inside posts is everybody starts to come down in that initial quarter mile run to the wire the first time, and then, of course, extended into the clubhouse turn. You know, he breaks, and he's okay there. He doesn't get shuffled around, and he might be about seventh coming out of the gate in good position. But by the time they got to the wire, he's 19th. He gets shuffled, because everybody starts coming over and trying to take the space that he's in. So it was a difficult post for him, you know, and he came with his run, and then when it was time to rally, he was right there with Rich Strike about three furlongs out. Sonny Leone decided to stay inside and save all the ground. Irad Ortiz went wide. Irad ended up in the nine path and gave away a ton of footage to the eventual winner, who saved the ground. And to his credit, you know, Rich Strike was good enough to get around the traffic. It's not like the seas parted and staying inside was like a no-duh move. He still needed to get through, and he did, and he got around Messier at the eighth pole. I don't know if Mo Donegal would have been adept enough to make that move and get around, you know, the tiring horse in front of him and keep rallying. I mean, I think it was exceptional what Rich Strike did. But Mo Donegal still came with his run. He got beat about, what, four lengths, something like that, to the wire. Ended up running fifth. I thought he ran a really good race. He's not going to be that far back in the Belmont Stakes comparatively to where he was in the Derby, because he got shuffled back by so many horses. There's not that many horses in the Belmont to shuffle him back that far, and he breaks from the sixth of eight, you know. So it's not like he's down on the inside and is going to be taken back and being held up early by Irad because of traffic issues. So I think he's going to get a much cleaner trip. He's going to get to show what he can do. And if he comes home the way he did in the Wood Memorial, I think he can win the race. And that's why I went back with him. Also, there's a little bit of handicapper's pride or commitment, I think, sometimes when you watch a series all the way through, like the Triple Crown, and you come up with your Derby horse. I know I'm this way, Seth. I mean, if I come up with a horse I think is the Derby winner, I'm going to give him a couple chances after that,
yeah.
right? Because there was a lot of weeks and months that went into me thinking this horse is pretty darn good, you know? And so I can't just jump off. I mean, I remember taking Louis, I mean, this is like ancient, I'm dating myself, but this is like 1996. Louis Couture was my horse, and he was terrible in the Kentucky Derby. Ended up 16th, didn't get out of the gate, troubled trip, the whole thing. Came back with him in the Preakness, and he went wire to wire, you know, under Pat Day, 2 weeks later. You got to show a little bit of commitment to these horses that if you like them that much, if you thought they were a Derby winner, with all the months of races you saw of theirs leading up to it, then I think you stick with them a little bit. So that's partially why I'm back on Modonical. But I also do think with a clean trip, that Wood Memorial is the best race any of these horses have run on paper, except Rich Strike's Kentucky Derby. Rich Strike's Kentucky Derby was a better race. But again, Rich Strike, he's got to do it one more time. I didn't like the two workouts. They were faster, but I wasn't wild about them. And the fact that, you know, you need a little chiropractic work and stuff like that after the Derby, I mean, I'm not saying it's like you draw a line for him and say no can do, but what's he going to beat? I mean, the odds in this race are going to be fascinating, right? I mean, like, Rich Strike goes from 80-1 to 4, maybe? Is he going to go 4-1 in here? I mean, 7-2 in the morning line. Maybe he even goes a little lower. I have no idea what the public's going to do with this race, you know? Will the filly Nest get sentimental money and be bet down lower than the 8-1? How much will Rich Strike get bet? How much will the speed figure devotees bet on We the People? Because, look, I mean, other than that big, what was it, 103 buyer that he got in the Peter Pan, what on earth makes We the People the favorite in the Belmont Stakes other than that one race, right? And so, you know, he got beat 13 lengths in the Arkansas Derby by a horse who ran like 17th or 18th or 19th in the Kentucky Derby. We the People on May 13th had no chance on earth of being the favorite for the Belmont Stakes. But later in that day, May 13th, he won the Peter Pan. He got a big speed figure, and the result of the Preakness kind of, you know, opened the door back up because the Preakness winner didn't come back in this race. So he's kind of the favorite by default. So it's going to be an interesting betting race. I don't know where the value is. You know, is Mo Donegal value at 5-2? And might he even be favored? It's a difficult race if you're a value bettor to try to figure out where it's going to be.
I am completely intrigued by, as you say, where the betting will go on Rich Strike and just how he's going to do. Because, again, coming out of the Derby, I said complete fluke. And at that time, I thought he's going to be up against it to win another big race. But he's worked very well. And, you know, we have seen it in the past. Funny Side comes to mind. Horses that just get good during that five-week period and kind of it all comes together. Is he that kind? We will validate or find out more about him this afternoon. But one of the factors I talked about this morning, and I didn't use him at all in my mix, and I'm really intrigued. But one of the factors also that had me against a little bit was Sonny Leone, who rode fabulously in the Derby, gets his first Grade One victory, graded victory, I think, overall in the Kentucky Derby of all places. Can he go back to back like that? But also to step onto that 1.5 mile Belmont Oval, which is going to be brand new to him. He worked a horse yesterday. He had a turf race, and I think he has a mount in an early race today. But I think he adds intrigue as well, as it'll be his first time going around a track of this circumference.
Yeah, and I don't think those pre-races mean anything unless you're riding in the Brooklyn at a mile and a half, because that's the whole key is, you don't realize how much turn there is at Belmont when you go around two turns, right? I mean, that track is such a big oval. There's so much turn. These horses will run on their inside lead, you know, around the turn, and it's going to be like the longest time they've ever run on that lead in their life. They'll never be able to ask that. And so, you know, how do you nurse and ration a horse like on the lead that long and things like that? That's, I think, where the experience is different. I think it got to Stuart Elliott on Smarty Jones. Of course, you know, there were other people going after him too and the pace, but Stuart moved way too soon, you know, and that was, you know, a key in his defeat, I think. So the experience factor for Sonny Leone does make a difference. And if you go back historically and look at Belmont Stakes winners, many of the horses themselves have run before and run well at Belmont. It can be a good horse for course look at this particular race. So the horses who have run well at Belmont in the past you know, Pletcher's two, We the People. I think there's some advantage to that, you know, so I think that's something to consider in there, as well as the experience of the jockeys riding over that course. But, yes, this will be a different race than Sonny Leone has ever ridden. The Kentucky Derby was different, too, right? So you can say, well, he did it in a 20-horse field. No, you know, that was completely unique to all the situation, and that is true. And now it's another unique situation, you know? I mean, just it's kind of like a spelling bee, you know? You might get one hard word right, but the second one might be even harder, you know? And he passed the test in the first one with a fantastic ride, but he's got to do it again. And, like, look, if he was going to do it in the Derby, you say, my God, if I'm going to bet an Ohio jockey with a Kentucky Mountaineer Ohio trainer in the Kentucky Derby, okay, I'm going to get 80-1 to find out if this is the miracle that works. But now you're going to get like $8, not 80-1, and that's a whole different ballgame. This whole card is this way. That's interesting from a gambling standpoint because there's so many little quirks. Like, the value on this card is going to be finding some horse who should be 2-1 that's 7-2.
Yeah.
You know, it's the value on this card is going to be subtle, where you're going to have an opinion where you think, I think this horse should be slightly favored, and he's like the third choice. I think that's where you're going to find. And you may have the right horse in that regard in Creative Minister, because of all the different scenarios we talked about, he seems the least likely to have like a hook that's going to bring extra people in to bet him, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
the Pletcher factor, the Philly factor, We the People's big speed figure, you know, like those kind of things will take a little bit more money than maybe they should. Rich Strike being the Derby winner is going to get more play than he would if he hadn't had the Derby victory. Obviously, if he was the Derby runner-up, he'd be 25-1, you know, or 20-1. But being the Derby winner, he could be, you know, 3-4-1. So I think your horse, Creative Minister, is as talented as any of these, and might be the value. If he's 6-1 in the morning line, I think he's going to be you might get more than that. That's the kind of horse, like I said, your value is going to be in, like, a horse you thought was going to be 6-1 in the morning line who goes off like 9, 10, you know? And that could be the great value play of the day, and hopefully by the time you get to race 11 of 13 and 6 hours into the day, 7 hours into the day, that your bankroll's there to play it and to capitalize on it. But I think that's kind of the kind of subtleness that will be the betting experience today. And Creative Minister, Seth, if there's one horse that you should be rooting for in this race, it's Creative Minister. Because he's making his third start in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
He ran on Derby Day on the undercard. He ran well in the Preakness off the 2-week turnaround when everybody was crying and bemoaning about, oh, the Preakness is tanked. The horses can't come back in it anymore. He came back on 2 weeks rest and ran a good third. If he runs 3 races in 5 weeks and wins the Belmont, then we could just shut everybody up on this nonsense about how the Triple Crown is broken and everything. You know what I mean? We've had 2 Triple Crown winners since 2015. This is just an anomaly year where the guy who won the Kentucky Derby either had something wrong with his horse that he didn't want to run back in the Preakness, or they were adamant they needed the 5 weeks in between because they knew he had chiropractic issues and all the other stuff. Maybe going into the race, they said it was normal for him to get chiropractic treatments after races. Maybe he figured we can't get it and be ready to go back in 2 weeks. Whatever the case, this was an anomaly that the Triple Crown has, like, no horses that ran in all 3 legs. You know, we only had 2 horses back in the Preakness. For the sake of the sanctity of the Triple Crown, the best horse who could win this race would be Creative Minister. Because if Rich Strike wins, you're going to see a bunch of people like, well, you know, I don't think we can sweep the Triple Crown, so, you know, we'll win the Derby and we'll wait for the Belmont. You know, and it's the Todd Fletcher approach. He hardly ever runs a horse back in the Preakness. The 5 weeks, Brad Cox never runs a horse back in the Preakness off the Derby. If we want the Preakness and the Belmont to stay strong for years and years to come in the current format, which I do, then Creative Minister is the best case scenario for that to be preserved.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even thought about that, but you're absolutely right. It was an optional claimer on Derby Day, but he has run on the Derby Preakness Belmont 5-week schedule, so that does add a little bit of intrigue to a very intriguing Belmont Stakes. And again, I'll tell people to swing by horseplayernow.com anytime for great horse racing information, but also pull up Countdown to the Crown. As I say, you have a Belmont edition where you go over the field and more. Jeremy, I've got to wrap it up because we want to get to the Naira pregame on an early post time Saturday. They kick off at 11:20, so the pregame's going to kick off shortly if they haven't already started. So I do have to wrap it. But again, always appreciate the conversation and the thoughts. Good luck this afternoon. We'll talk again.
All right. Take care, everybody. Good luck.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, Countdown to the Crown, horseplayernow.com. Been checking in with Jeremy throughout the lead up and throughout the Triple Crown season, so we had to pull him in today to get some thoughts on the Belmont, which, again, very intriguing race. I'm going to wrap it up, but I'll be back in. Well, I'll jump in as we kick off the Belmont program a little bit later, but do want to wrap it up now so we can get to the NYRA pregame with Andy and Anthony and get some of their thoughts on this big Belmont Stakes Day card. So let me put a bow on it and wrap it up, an abbreviated edition of Racing Across America. Thanks for tuning in. Again, it's Belmont Stakes Day. Should be a lot of fun. We'll take you throughout the afternoon on OTB Live on this special Saturday. So be back in a couple hours for that. But now let's send it down to NYRA. Andy and Anthony, pregame at NYRA, looking at Belmont Stakes Day and a fabulous card. So tune into that.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.